Joe Dembo. This is Cliff Evans. It's now about 2 minutes past 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm in Casey Stengel's room, his suite here at the Colonial Beach, the Colonial Inn at St. Petersburg Beach, Florida. I'll be talking with Casey in just a few minutes. Of course, it may seem strange to be doing an interview with Stengel at 7 o'clock in the morning, but it was the only time possible. As a matter of fact, he hasn't given any radio interviews, and even individual newspaper interviews are kind of difficult to come by. Stengel is so busy these days down here, not only trying to put together a baseball team under the banner of the New York Mets in the National League, but also doing so very much in the way of public relations for the club. So he's on the go all the time. When I first got down here a few days ago and told Casey I would like to do an interview with him, he said, fine. He said, it'll take a few days, but don't worry, you'll get it. Last night, Jimmy Cannon, the sports columnist, cornered Casey and asked him when he could do an interview with him, and Casey said, frankly, he didn't know. He was kind of busy. And Cannon asked whether it could be done in the evening, and Stengel said, no, not last night. How about this morning? And Stengel said, no, in the afternoon he'd be at the ballpark, and no, and in the, how about tomorrow evening? And that's the way it went. Casey kept saying no. I happened to come across the lobby. Stengel spotted me, called me over, and turned to Cannon and said, now, Cliff here, he's been waiting for days. I promised him, and he's the first one that I am going to give the interview to. And then he said to me, how about meeting me in my room at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning? Well, it's not a happy thought, but there was no choice. And so here it is, just very few minutes past 7 o'clock in the morning in a resort. And in a few minutes, I'll be talking baseball with the inimitable, as the saying goes, the one and only, and that's kind of true, the name Casey Stengel. We'll talk about a lot of different things. There are no holes here. Stengel has not said what I can ask him or what I cannot ask him. He's not ruled anything out. So we'll try to go in many different areas. I have enough tape here, and Stengel said it was all right, so that I expect, hold your breath, I expect we'll be talking for 1 hour or more. And if you can't get anything out of an hour, well, all right. So stand by, and in about a minute or so, Stengel will be in here. He's sort of throwing some water on his face to get in shape for this. And he'll be wearing his glasses because he's more comfortable talking when he wears glasses. And he'll be in here very shortly, and then we'll go ahead. So stand by. Incidentally, when I said that Casey and I will be talking for about an hour, that's a bit of an exaggeration. Casey will talk for an hour, and I'll be listening for an hour. All right, see you shortly. Stand by now. Casey, one of the built-in hazards, it is said, about being a baseball player is a separation of a man from his family. The family may be his parents, the family may be his wife, the family may be his wife and children. Now, I ask you this as the dean of baseball. Is this a very serious hazard, or is this no different, actually, from any other business?
Well, I think it is a serious habit. I really believe that a number of men are that way. They'd rather get out of the baseball business, stay home with their family, stay home with their children, be around their children while they're being raised. Now, if you have a good business, or if you're at home and you're making money, that's great. But in the big league, if you're getting an ordinary salary, I can easily see that a man would figure that way. He'd say, well, I'd rather be home with my parents. Now, I have a couple of men, I might say this year, I don't want to mention their names, and they are very excited about bringing their wife down here to spring training and three children. And why a man the first year in the big league that wanted to make good with a major league club, which your ambition is the major league, you might make large sums, you may have a great future in baseball, why he would allow 30 days to make it possible for his wife to come down to a spring training camp when he is going out and fighting for a position in baseball. Now, I had a conversation with a couple of men, and I think the men are wrong. They said, well, for 30 days they have to do it. The reason for that is this. The young man just gets married. He loves his wife, loves the children. He gets homesick and he wants them down here and he don't care regardless of the expense. In other words, he's thinking of his family before he's made good with the baseball team. Now, if you're an outstanding star or been on one ball club 1 year, anybody should be able then to come to a ball club at spring training if he wants to pay his wife's expenses. Naturally, a young married woman wants to stay with her husband, and she wants to come to spring training because it's just like, why do people go to Florida? Why do people go to California? Why do people go to Europe? That's a great trip for her. And it's a very big disappointment for her not to make a trip with her husband, and naturally, that's interested in his life.
Casey, I've known you over a period of years. I've talked with you many times. I've interviewed you many times. Actually, no matter what the question has been that I've ever put to you, your answer always has been clear and has been lucid. Now, I notice there's a little sign outside in front here in this motel that says, Stengely spoken here, and I've seen that phrase before. And while I think it makes good copy, it's never quite made sense to me. Now, how would you define this new American word, Stengelese?
I don't know how to define it. It's just that I become rather excited on numerous occasions in my life, and then I got very careless with my English after I left high school. And being around with the baseball players and on the baseball field and discussing so many things, naturally, in the baseball line, I did get probably a baseball slang. Now, the Stengelese was picked up by one or two writers, and it just kept being carried and carried and carried on. And now people want to use it all the time as a free ad. In other words, I know down here at this motel, when I walked in and saw that long list of Stengelese, they seem to call that advertisement, but it's not funny advertisement for the individual. I don't have to have it. Doesn't make too much difference to me. I get out and seem to be able to be successful in more than one thing, and if people want to make a little money with that, of course, from now on, I generally make the people that are writing about the sting at least pay me a large sum of money.
Casey, you're baseball's number one success. I say that it isn't only the sums of money that you've enjoyed for your services, but also the long record of performance, the long record of success. Now, looking back over the years, have you ever regretted that you did not become a dentist rather than a baseball player?
Well, yes, I did. There was the first 4 years that I played professional baseball, I was rather disappointed in the salary. I couldn't see how I could travel around and get a very small sum. When you start baseball in those days, I received $135 a month. The next year, I received $175 a month. When I was in the major league, and just think, I arrived in New York City, I had received only $2,400 salary. Now, that's a very small sum to think you want to be in a baseball business unless you're getting a lot of sport out of it and fun. Now, at this year time to go into the baseball business, I thought I ought to get larger rates. They couldn't afford to pay you. They had wooden ballparks. They had 25, 50-cent baseball. But remember, you could stay in a hotel then for a dollar a night. And I stayed many a time in a hotel while it was a dollar a night. I'll admit the view wasn't very large in New York City because we had inside rooms. In other words, if I wanted to know if it was raining outside, I would possibly have to call up downstairs and say, would you look out and see if it's raining so I can have to get up to go to the ballpark for that day.
Casey, there is a term used on occasions to describe you, the old professor. And yet, I think it might be a surprise to some people to know that there was a time when you were on a college faculty. Would you tell us about that?
Well, I was at Mississippi University. The third year that I played professional baseball, I injured my shoulder. It happened in Philadelphia. And that was a very serious shock to me because one of the things I had was a very good throw and accurate throwing arm and used to have numerous assists during the season. After injuring my shoulder, I went back to Kansas City and I said, well, now am I going to complete dentistry? So I said, well, I have to give baseball another whirl. And I figured that a coach that we had by the name of Mr. Driver, he took over Mississippi University, and he was so busy with the football team, he asked me to take over the baseball team. And I did that and coached the university baseball team, and we win the might say, Southern Championship of Southern Colleges. And now they call me the old professor from Ole Miss.
Except they don't realize, generally speaking, that you have a legal or a logical or a moral or an honest claim of being called professor. Casey, it's been said that baseball has played better today than years ago. Would you agree, better or different?
Well, I'd have to say that's the best statement. It's played different. In the old days when a strong big man like Baker and Cravath, they hit 15...
That's Frank Home Run Baker.
They'd hit, in other words, they'd hit 15 home runs. Therefore, there was less triples. There was less doubles. There wasn't so many doubles. There wasn't so many triples. Now, what happened then was the fact that the balls didn't go as far and you was an outstanding hitter. Now, therefore, you had to play more compact. The ball wouldn't go as far, so the outfielders could play closer to each other, go further and catch the ball, get a better start on a ball. Nowadays, if you go to get an outfielder and you get near this here baseball, sometimes the ball is going faster than the outfield. But it used to be that some outfielders could outrun the baseball. In other words, it didn't have the speed going through the air, and they would come in closer and catch base hits, and they'd go over their head and could go further and catch them because of the speed of the baseball. Now, if you were an infielder, naturally you ought to be able to cover more ground because the ball wasn't hit through the infield as lively and you saw more sensational play. I think it's very much harder now to play a ball because they've done nothing to help the infielder except give him a better glove and make the infield better. In other words, we have, tenders of the ground or ground keepers that stand out there, eight or five or six men, and what do? They make a wonderful ground. It's just like a pool table. So is the outfield. The outfield used to be very bumpy, but the infield was bumpy at one time also. But the infields now are terrific in the big league, and they drag him so many times. You have a better glove to catch with. The baseball man has a slicker ball. They don't allow you to dirty up the ball. We used to put licorice on the baseball. We used to put tobacco on the baseball. And we used to scuff the baseball up when they had concrete stands. And that would make the ball jump to the right, to the left, or you might say upward or down. Now, with all those things, we became what you call was pitching cheaters. Therefore, you didn't need many relief pitchers because how could you get knocked out so often? There was less home runs, less triples. And nowadays, though, to be an infielder and an outfielder, you have to have covered quite a bit of ground and you have to have a good glove and you have to have more teamwork. In other words, they have coaches now for other positions. In the major league, to build up a major league club, we really have to have numerous coaches. You have a pitching coach. He takes care of 18 pitchers. Now, you supervise it, but you put your pitching coach to instruct the man how to stand on the rubber, where to put his hands, what position should he put at his knee, how should he stand with a windup, how should he stand with a man on first base. He should face more naturally the first baseman, how to stand with a man on second base. Then he should be taught where the outfield and infield plays. If there is an infield back, how to pitch a ball to make him hit a high fly ball if possible. Then you have numerous men that you'd say is a slick ball and the ball is hit so hard through the box. And I know some of the young men now have been shocked from being hit on the shins and on the head. And it's the most dangerous thing in baseball today is to be a pitcher. It's not to be a hitter. Is to be a pitcher. A pitcher could stand out there, he doesn't have a helmet on, you have one if you're a batter, and you finally get what you call shell shock. You get nervous, or you deliver a ball, and you recoil from it. You're afraid the big man's going to get a hold of it and hit it back at you, and some of them do, and it gets these pitchers where they get off the shy, you know, instead of on a radar beam for that ball to go over the plate. They're really off the radar beam because they think it might be hit back and they recoil instead of following through on the rubber to the hitter.
Casey, we were talking before about what a young man should do when he's at the crossroads in his life, whether he should go to college or if he has an opportunity to go into baseball, whether he should take that. There's a young man on your team. He's a tall, well-built boy. His name is Sherman Jones, and he's one of nine children. When he was graduated from high school, he had several opportunities, scholarships to go to college. Unfortunately, the family was kind of poor, and he had to pass up college and went into pro ball. Of course, whether or not he'll make it or not, this is entirely up to him. But, Casey, the relationship, the everyday relationship between a player and the manager, it isn't only that a player will follow orders, orders given him by his manager, but is the relationship a close one? Can a player who has a personal problem, can he go to his manager?
Well, he can go to his manager, but sometimes the player has misinformed you. Numerous players, you know, get into professional baseball, and they're making money rather easily, and they spend it rather easily. And then they want more money. And the first time they ever have a good year, they think you ought to pay them for the next 25. But you're only paid for a season. And I love to see ball players get the money because I'm just the manager, and the greater they play, the greater they make Mr. Stengel the manager. But there is a fact that some ball players don't establish himself. He has 1 year, and then he thinks he is the greatest man in the world, but he forgets the games the next year are very important also. So he don't keep himself on an even basis, I mean, with his own ideas or for his own education to make this amount of money, and he thinks, well, that's it, I ought to get it every day or I gotta get out of the profession. I'll tell you what I think about baseball. Up to that time, I know if you can go to university now, look what it costs to go to a university. It's almost impossible. I say if you can go to a university for 4 years, and I would average now that it's $10,000 possibly a year. Just think of parents or yourself, and you're out $40,000 for an education. If I had $40,000 for an education years and years ago, my heavens, you'd be fairly wealthy if you had the $40,000. I'd take the education 4 years of a university, then I'd go into baseball. Because if you play baseball while you're at the university and you have enough skill to go into baseball, you are double protected. You can go back and defend your family. You can go and support you. If you get married, your own family, and if you can't make it in baseball, to a certain extent, then you drop back, and for goodness sake, you at least have an education that you could go on to it. But it's a great game, the baseball. The sport is now getting so that they don't want as much foolishness as they used to, and there's so many men that a number of men are traded in baseball for a very funny reason. They are traded because of careless or because they're not pinks or reds, but they can't stay interested on that ball field when they get up in the morning and leave their family. They can't go out and stay with the baseball, follow that baseball, make a study of every part of the department and study then another line, like base running if you're a pitcher, to offset maybe a weakness that you have. If you can't protect a weakness, you should evidently be able to eliminate it. Now, the greatest thing is to eliminate it, but if you can't, you have to spend time out here daily to protect the weakness, because there's very few men that are perfect in every department of the game.
Casey, you were telling me before how baseball, that it's a different type game. Now, as the players themselves, you have a pitcher on your team, Jay Hook. Now, he's working on his master's degree in engineering, and he's a member of the American Rocket Society. He's very knowledgeable on subjects of propulsion and so on and so forth. Is he somewhat typical of the developing change of players, more and more coming out of college, interests in other things too?
Yes, that's true. I mean, I'm somewhat frightened to interview some of those young men. It's the truth. Now, they naturally, if they have a setback, or if he had his arm injured or slightly injured, he's very near protected. He probably can make enough money now before they find out if his arm is recovered 100%, to which he can get through in that line. You know, every span of your life there is a good profession, I would say. When I first started in dentistry, why, we got 50 cents or 75 cents for an amalgam filling. So if I'd have gone into dentistry, and the way in dentistry is advanced, and they have these white offices, you don't mean to tell me I'd be making a filling for 50 or 75 cents, or that I would be making a plate for $5 or $10. No, doubt if I'd be doing that. I think I would figured that dentistry is getting better, and it's a better profession because you get better prices and for your work, and it's really skillful work. Now, if you go into baseball and you still can do the numerous things that you say that several of my pitchers can do, they're really on the way that if they are injured at the present time or if anything comes up, they can do it. Now, let's go into it after dentistry. You used to have a profession you went into. What did a steam fitter get? What did a carpenter get? Now let's look what you get in baseball at the present time. The salaries now in baseball are the biggest joke I ever heard of. I mean, as far as the saying that he's playing for $2,500, why, you know, you absolutely have to pay a man $7,500, and that's just the minimum going up. Now, of course, I honestly believe that in the different professions there is now, there is a change. In other words, it's like a wheel and a spoke in the wheel. Now, baseball's got better, which makes a spoke. Now, let's go into the automobile business. The automobile's got better, so there was a great thing to go into the automobile business and get in with a large automobile company and hold your, well, I might say, your position for life. Now, since that has started, we'd ask you, what else is there? Now, of course, I'd have liked to sign that astronaut the other day and brought him here with the New York Mets, but I can understand how young men now are so interested and know from the Pacific Coast that industries now start to educate you, I mean, for new professions, and that's just what they're doing now outside of the aircraft into space.
Of course, the players, they look different, they seem to think different, they seem to be the business type today. Is there less humor in baseball today than there was years ago?
Well, I should think there would be less humor because they don't care for a comedian on the ball field. Any man that has a $7 million and a half investment, he does not like for you to jump up and fool around too much on a ball field for one or two reasons. If you don't do well in that sport that day, he said, this man's not serious and he is ruining my investment. Now, that's their personal feeling about it, but if you have comedy and you have it talking to a player, or you have it in the clubhouse, you have it on the ball field, but you must be serious and try to get to home plate and try to fool the batters, because most managers are very serious on the ball field, and they try to bring the player up to study all the departments of the game and have methods of play, and to be baseball comes first, but want a financial reward, and also to be particular about your profession, because you should dress properly and you should look properly if you're a young man. And I found out that in St. Petersburg and where the Yankees trained and other ball clubs that I've been with, when the ball player puts on a tie and he walks into a dining room and he's young, the elderly parents or the people that are around in that hotel, they look at him and in some way he resembles a relation of theirs or somebody that they're interested, like a nephew or a niece that you have in your family, and maybe the wife does the same for the ball player. And the way you carry yourself off the field makes it very easily for you to go home in the winter and have somebody that wants your services to put you in an outside business or to keep your profession way up at a high point. And that's just what baseball has done today. It sure has grown up to a tremendous profession, and they are rather insistent now that you don't get careless or pink or tell them what's wrong with themselves instead of saying, do something. You can't win games in the clubhouse, but you sure can be a nice fella in the clubhouse and keep your clubhouse clean just like you ought to your room if you're going to school or at home. Now, we have a wonderful clubhouse, a man that keeps it up there, and when we have lunch, you really, it's as clean as the floor, and we have everything just as a good start to start you on your way when we put you in the clean uniform. Now, the next thing is, why don't you study baseball? It's a quick profession. What profession in the world is there that they have? There is nothing. DuPont wouldn't give it to you. There isn't, as great as they are, or any large industry. Where in the world did you ever hear of a profession that, my goodness, that you get an annuity or that you can stop and, my saying, start at 50 years of age? It's unheard of. It's never been done before. So ball players then should be informed, protect your profession and get your start if you're injured by doing something else besides baseball.
I don't know anybody who has as much respect for the profession as you do, Casey Stengel, and by the same token, I don't know anybody who's made as many contributions to baseball as you have. I'm referring, of course, to the platooning system, to the instructional school, and on and on. The other day, I was down in Sarasota. I spoke to one of your pupils, if I may put it that way, Al Lopez. He's one of baseball's superior managers, manager of the Chicago White Sox. You, of course, you're the dean of all the managers. He played for you, and he told me that he could tell years ago, even though there were times when the players that you had were not of great skill, when the teams were not a fair team for a manager, he could tell then the way you handled the players, the consideration that you gave the players. He mentioned names to me that he could tell then that you were going to really be a top manager. Of course, no one could forecast, Casey, that you were going to be the great manager, as no one can forecast what tomorrow will be. But he was telling me what it's like to play for you, and also what it meant in more recent years when he was a manager against you. And he said that it wasn't only that you were the opposing manager, but you were the opposing manager plus, which of course made it more difficult for him. Casey, looking back over the years, who was the greatest player that you ever saw?
Well, naturally, I can't tell you that. In 60 or 70 years, you have to go on a span, as I tell you, every 10 years. Now, here's the thing that I have to get into. I may not have spanned 50 or 60 years of great ball players, and I put them over 10 years. Now, I never put Mantle's name in there because of the fact he is just starting, and he had osteomyelitis, and he looked like maybe any year he'd be thrown out of baseball, and he might come into the Dean class, where Dizzy Dean got injured, you know, and was wiped out suddenly. Now, the trouble with Mantle at the present time, he looks like he did last year in the way he is playing as a fielder. If I wanted to make a statement for the next 5 years, if Mantle is physically fit and can play, Mantle would have to be one of my leading 10 ball players that I ever saw in baseball. But at the present time, I've held off on him because of the fact I was throwing out so many great men, you'd say in 1910 to 1920, 20 to the 30s, 30s to the 40s, 40s to the 50s, and to the 60s. Now, when you go in there and you try to pick men off of both teams, it's really shocking, as I state. I've picked it for the National League, and I say, oh, my heavens, look how great that team is. And I'd say, well, that team is almost impossible to beat. Then I switched and turned over to the American League, and when I finished there, I said, my goodness, I don't know. I guess this team could beat the other team, but it could only do it on certain occasions. I think that both teams, when you pick the greatest, one team would finish first in the other great team would finish second in the league, regardless of whether it was an American League or it was a National League. Now, to get down to real ball players, I'd say they were great. Now, managers were terrific. I think at the present time that Richards has come in with some new ideas and sensible ideas, and so has Lopez. Now, Lopez that I watched play, he was a terrific player for me. He became a great catcher. I'm speaking not as a hitting catcher. So he had to be friendly with the pitchers. Most every pitcher never criticized Lopez, and yet he was very aggressive and was helping the pitcher while he was catching. He advanced in anything. He found out how he could field. He could go out and get a bunt from home plate, and he was very alert on the situation. Now, he became very good as a manager because we found that out, and I watched. And last year was the first time he ever dropped out of second place. Now, he is very quick at building. I'd be interested to watch this team this year. I noticed during the winter that he accumulated, tearing down a ball club, a number of pitchers. In other words, they think his pitching staff's gone, but he may come through with three or four men that are remade. He's great on remaking a pitcher for one, 2 or 3 years. Wilbur Robinson was a manager, loved big hitters and loved tall pitchers. He didn't believe a small pitcher could... In his mind, he lost confidence in a small pitcher. He wanted a great big man out there, and he thought that he kind of humiliated and shocked the batter when he was up. And he loved big hitters. Now, he was great on picking up pitchers that had worked for somebody else and patting them on the back and getting a new lease of life on them. He did that many years. Now, Lopez is very great, I think, on building, and he's very sharp. Lopez, no doubt, has a following. It's an amazing thing. I don't want to mean to knock Tampa, but it's an amazing thing to go over to his hometown. He's considered the mayor, or, well, I don't want to criticize the mayor, but he has a better standing in that city that he started with, and the way he started up. In that city, he is supposed to be Mr. It with most everybody and without criticism. Now, there's another thing that he's done. I notice every coach that he's had. They've worked for me a number of years. The men he started out with coaching, wherever he gets a position, and he's in demand. I know if I was an owner, he would be very much in demand if I wanted to pick a manager. I would say that Lopez seems to be able to get along with men. He does not, he will probably criticize a player, although he'd be right in his criticism on the field. But I mean off the field, if you do anything wrong or your attitude isn't right for the spirit of that ball club, why, he's liable to take you and give you a good dressing down. He is, but he is a perfect gentleman on the field to work for. And they have to be very careful when they do something, because they know that they are really possibly insulting the ball club and himself too. Now, if you'd say that about me, I'd say no. I have too strong a voice. I yell at players once in a while on the ball field, but I do respect them after the season is over. And I'm very proud of any man that has a good record after the season is over. And you get very egotistical and think you're a part of it. And I think my coaches are too. I like to see my coaches now enter into it and take a part of it. It's so big now that I could take a part in it, but they want you doing 5 or 6 other things, and I'd have to do everything. But on the field, you have people that can get out and just keep those men jacked up, where you really have to go to work when you're on a ball field to be a coach. My coaches that I have here are all new coaches this year, and that's another different thing for me in baseball, because I hate to start with new coaches and new ball players. But I did, and that's it again. Now I have to rebuild the ball club. Everybody is a stranger. My owners are strangers, but they are financially able and capable to maybe assist me in buying me a player for a large sum. Now that's an addition. Now you would say, are they? Do they have a good reputation? I'd say yes. In sportsmanship, you might say the. In the racing business, I would have to say that they have a very high standing. If you're just speaking in the in business, the same thing. Now, what else do they have? Well, you have a business manager who's been 33 years of success, so that should help some, unless something happens to them. We don't have a farm system. Why do they have a farm system? Because it'll help build up baseball club. We have to start over, or the office does, and get new scouts. And good scouts are hard to get, because the good ones, they don't want to quit a good job unless they could come to a club like this and build themselves up. This is a great club to go to for a young man going into a profession. Because if I wanted to be a scout, I'd last here 10 or 15 years if I worked hard and brought in a good ball player. Now, if I wanted to be a ball player, why shouldn't you play here? We're going to a new stadium. Just think, in 1 year, we'll have the most modern stadium in the world, next to the Chevy's Ravine. This will be a place with escalators. Who ever heard of having escalators at a ballpark? Now, the other thing is, you might say, well, what are you going to do with the clubhouses? What about parking? everything that has been thrown out in stadiums in the last 15 years will be added because of the World's Fair. So why shouldn't you want to play in one of the great cities of the world and buck the competition regardless of the Yankees? That's up to scouts. That's up to an incentive of ball players wanting to play for you. And the first thing you know, the New York Mets will be very well known. I'll admit that right now it's just starting out, but we're after it in the boom. And some of the players seem to be very confident. They're glad they're on this here team, starting a new life over, if it's that way, in the major leagues.
Well, I can tell you that, Casey, because I've interviewed about 11 or 12 of the players, and they all speak of the excitement and being proud of being associated with Casey Stengel. They also are hopeful that the team will work out. But you said something before, Casey, that you glossed over. You said that you speak in a loud voice or yell at players. That may be. I wouldn't know about that. But I do know that players who have put out for you, that you have spoken up for them to get more money. And I can't think of a better way to reciprocate for a player than to try to get more money for him. Casey, when I asked you about the greatest players you've ever seen, you said you divide them into 10-year periods. But did you purposely not mention any names?
Well, I didn't care about mentioning too many names. I would say the greatest shortstop I ever saw in my life was Hans Wagner. He was amazing. He was a very big man with broad shoulders. He had looked odd at the plate, but he's a terrific hitter. He could go to his right, he could go to his left, a shortstop. He could come in and get a slow hit ball, a hard hit ball. He could go over his head and catch a fly ball. He was great on relays. He was a great base runner. In other words, he'd jump off first base. He could read the pitcher's moves. Therefore, he was a splendid base runner. Now, he could do everything. The second best man I ever saw, I would say, in the National League, I thought, was Glenn Wright. Now, I'm speaking of hitters. Glenn Wright only lasted a few years before he had an injury, a serious injury of his arm. They had, that took away a lot of zip out of his play and from beautiful throws. But the first three or four years, he had it. He could hit the ball hard, and he could go to his right and left, and he was terrific. And I thought that Wagner was a great ball player for a little man in the nation. Yes, Paul Wagner was a great man from a little in baseball. I'm speaking about a small man. Now, a small man that's great with a lively ball. People forget that years and years ago, a small man, when a strong man only hit 15 home runs, and a small man was playing and playing great, he could move to his right. They're quicker, you know. It is just like they could move around on the ball field, and they were greater players then and came up. Now this big thing of a strong pitcher and the other thing of being what you have to do now in baseball is you have to have a pitching staff, a number of pitchers, because you change the pitchers often. A pitcher works so hard. You see them run for a half an hour. The public don't know that between their starts, some of them run for maybe an hour. Well, you know, after 5 or 6 years, I can see why pitchers want to quit, because they only pitch every fourth day if they love the business. Then if they have to run, and after a certain length of time, you notice in life that people, as they get older, they don't run, they start walking, and then slower. So you lose the value, and the pleasure of being a runner. In other words, you have to work so hard to stay in physical condition to be a pitcher, and you're using a slick ball, and you're taking out of a game, and that's the most humiliating part of baseball now, is when a manager has to go out and take a pitcher out. Now, that's a tough thing. He's worked 4 days hard. You know, it's a serious thing to, I give you this ball and you're going to pitch for me every fourth day, and that's the way you want to pitch, and I do better pitching that way. So I give this man his baseball that day, and he goes out and he's not capable. I go out and say, let me have that baseball, and he is not only feeling about it, but he is mad at the fact that he waited 4 days and he's got to wait 4 more days before he gets another start. But you have to go out and take the pitchers out, because nowadays it just is very few men finish ball games, because that ball is too lively, too many triples, too many home runs. But since baseball says that's what they want, I will tell you, to be a ball player now with the balls that spring through the infield, you have to have a better glove, and you should get more credit for being a good infielder, although you have a better diamond to play on. The ball not going through the infield fast should make greater fielders, and you should be a better pitcher in the olden days. That's why you could go. They're just as strong now. In the olden days, you could stand out and place a ball, and the men could get at you. You couldn't bundle up and get 5 and 6 runs an inning, which is not the present time.
You said before, Casey, that you can't exactly forecast how your team will work. And, of course, you can't. But there's one thing, however, that you have been doing that those of us who've seen you admire you so much for. I said earlier how much respect you have for baseball, tremendous respect for the game as a profession, but also the way you've been working here. I don't mean only on the field. The different speeches that you've been making in public and the time that you spend with your players here on the field and off the field, but you're so busy that here we are. You've cut into your night, into your morning, more or less. We're doing an interview. It's just a little after 7 o'clock in the morning. And all this that you do for the New York Mets, I can't think of any one person doing more than that. Casey, under your... on the teams that you've had, is there one player that you would say is the greatest that you've managed?
Oh, yes, I'd have to say now, if I look it over, every team that I managed, I would say DiMaggio was the greatest. He could execute every play on the field. He was playing in a park that wasn't built for him. And naturally, he'd go way to his right, way to center field, and might say left center. It'd been amazing to see those men if they could pick their own parks. If they're that great in a park that's not built for them, and you never were booed in a park that's just not the way you want to hit, so on and so forth, then you must be an amazing man, because just what would you have done if you'd have been in a park that they had built? I mean, just a great way for you to be great. And I'll speak about anything else, and you say, well, I go out and do certain things. Well, there's certain times in your life that you have to do certain things. In other words, I would say broadcasting is a new business in baseball, and the television business has made owners wealthy. I mean, it makes it possible for a ball player to get an annuity. It makes it also great for a ball club to have extra money. Now, I've watched broadcasters, some of them, and some of them are not fair enough in their conversation with you. So, you know, to be a broadcaster and be fair, you don't take advantage of the men too often in an interview. I've had several men that drove me wild when I had to go on the air and broadcast. I had several men one time when you're in a World Series and my team played bad and got beat by one run, and I possibly booted some too maybe during the game, and the broadcaster said, do you think that your team has lost its nerve? Now, how could you lose your nerve then, unless it had been that a bomb was exploded or that you had something that would make you what you'd call shell shock, a sharp noise or something, a fright. But when they come to you like that, and you know men in your heart didn't feel that way, it was just the other team was too strong for you on that occasion.
Casey Stengel, baseball's number one manager. Can you put your finger on it and tell me what makes a good manager?
Well, that's a very hard thing to discuss managing. They said many times that I was missing the ball in a number of ways as a manager. I think that you have to do different things. One of the greatest things you have to do if you're a manager is to see if you can't outthink the other man that's an opponent. You should have some new ideas to cross him up, because you know an intelligent manager is very hard to win, because you have to play a little opposite. Now, what I mean is opposite of what maybe baseball is. Baseball was written in a book, and it proves it. Almost everything is written in some of the baseball books about how to make this play and discussions of plays. But if you're playing against a very brilliant manager and a third baseman, or a first baseman, and he has a fairly good team, and he's very alert. Sometimes when you execute at the plate, this is a plate play, and you're a batter, you have to do the opposite thing. In other words, you try to keep out a double play because 2/27 of a ball game is gone the minute you hit into a double play. Therefore, the manager tries to get a combination that can make catch and make double plays. Therefore, you're on one side of it, it's better, and I'm on the other side, I have to have some batters to keep out of the double play. Well, we know there's three ways of keeping out of a double play. If you bunt a ball and it's on the ground, you can't, they don't have time enough to get a double play. We know if you hit behind the runner, that if you can, right-hand hitter, you can force Matchley, makes longer plays for double plays. We know that you try to manufacture a run. You know, every day they're putting in tremendous scoreboards. And if you start to be a manager or you judge managing, you have to look at that scoreboard and you have to know when you're behind or ahead or what kind of players you can shove into the ball game that maybe it'll make your attack stronger. That is, if you've had a weak two innings, and I made some mistakes, they thought, in maybe a World Series, in which I took a couple of young men on in the second inning. But why wait to the eighth or ninth if you don't get on base? What good are the men that are sitting around that possibly could pinch hit? Now, that was my method of play, but maybe that isn't right, because you have to win in seven games in a World Series. And now, you just can't wait till next year. If you're behind three runs, you got to use anything you have on your lineup. Now, in pitching is a big thing. Pitching for managers is a tough thing. You get some pitchers and say they're moody, and say they get they're so determined they get mad out on the rubber. In other words, they're mad when you get a hit, or that they haven't solved the hitter this day. And if they're commenced upon him, they get so mad that they tighten up their arm and they don't pitch relaxed. In other words, your arm should be like a rubber hose. You should just be like a whip. Why do they have a whip so it'll crack, and why is it smaller at the end? That's the way your arm should be. It should be very loose, and you shouldn't get so mad and tighten up and when you're a pitcher. Now, if you're a manager, the big things for a manager, I always said, which I've noticed, is that they can keep confidence in the club or keep that club going the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. The toughest thing in my life, or at any time I found out, and men that I played for were managers. I thought they were great. Some are, they were amazing in teaching. They were amazing in having good ideas, how to teach on a perfection scale. But that manager that can still stay excited instead of thinking the day is over and convince his players that that ball game isn't over until you're through with the ninth, that manager always in his life will have 5 or 10 years that it looks like something is going to happen in your favor in the seventh, eighth, and ninth. In other words, you got to believe that you're going to win every day, and managers that you see that are watching you and have those players at a high pitch, that they know they're in just a new uniform. That isn't a case of just New York. It's New York is sold a line. If you want to play on the Yankees, you have to do this and that, and it's bred and it's worked in. Now, that was put in by a couple of men, but to tell you the truth, Gary could hit if he played with another town. And I think Ruth was a fairly good hitter, as I chased those balls many a time when he was with the Red Sox and up at Baltimore. And I know that the Yankees have a collection of teamwork, or they let you go to another ball club. Now, that's what we're trying to build up here. We're not afraid of competition. I'm not afraid when the season opens if I'm building these coaches to be able to manage. I am trying this year to train my players that have been passed up, or that somebody has made a mistake in, or that have lost their interest in their positions with other clubs. I am trying to influence them and convince them that if they have a uniform on, it's as good as the opposing uniform. We are playing with the same size ball. Our baseball is not. heavier than any other baseball. We all have the same things, and you must look at that opponent and figure he's a human being. He hasn't got a shotgun. He might throw the ball like it was shot out of a shotgun, but there is a possibility that if you can get 25 men convinced that way, that the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning will do the greatest thing in the world for you, those big expensive scorecards. Because when you go home or you go out of a ballpark or you have anybody call you up or they're following your team, they generally say, what was the score? And to be the scorer and to have a score, your players have to have a combination and get to home plate. And each player that you have, that I have, I am training them to become where they can go to work in the organization and get to have a great position if they love baseball to support people. And I've got my coaches so trained that I'm giving them individual effort so that they can run this ball club if it's the choice of the ownership, if there is a change in the management. Now, Casey, too, I don't want to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
But the player end of it, why shouldn't I make my players brighter and my coaches than the manager? And if I do, maybe they'll do better in life. Maybe they can be instructors at a university or a school. Maybe they want to, they just like this profession, regardless of even if they had to go and teach it at a high school or a university. Now, if that's the situation, what about my coaches? What if I make them as bright as my coaches? Then they don't need much coaching, and they won't need Mr. Stengel around if anything happens to Mr. Stengel.
Well, I hope nothing happens to Mr. Stengel, and to dispose of Mr. Stengel that quickly, Casey, I've never heard you play yourself down that easily. But Casey, you've been married for approximately 40 years. Let me ask you about the First Lady of Baseball, Mrs. Stengel, Edna, as we call her. Does she ever talk baseball to you? Does she dare?
Well, she talks baseball with me, but in this way, I think she's a very confident wife. She thinks I'm the brightest man ever on a ball field, if she's ever in. And men won't argue back with her, and very seldom do men argue back with a woman. You know, that's one thing. Now, if it was my brother, they'd probably argue back with him and so forth, but... Men have a way with my wife that she's been a very confident woman, dressed as well, you know, puts on a very sharp front. She's done that all her life, and she's been a girl that started out in business. She's worked for, a comptometer operator, and she has worked her way into baseball, and I talked her into, I guess, marrying me in 1921 when I was with the Giants, and she made a visit to visit Irish Musil, who was wife, was a friend, and come from Michigan, where Mrs. Stengel had come from Menominee, Michigan. Now, being in business like that and so forth, and they had a large estate, or you might say a real estate out on the coast, and when her mother passed away and her father, she used to run those new apartment houses. She'd go out, and she generally had lady managers. And that was sort of an odd thing. And she trained them that they could be superior to a man in the management of apartments. And she knew how to build, knew how, got where she liked figures and to sit around and work with figures. And I suppose that that's the one reason why she's been interested in baseball. She thinks I'm a great manager, but she's enjoyed the good times I've had because she likes the players' wives and likes their family. We never have had any children, so my wife has been very loyal, and I might say it's amazing that she's been that loyal for her own side of the family. Most all the children are in school, and it looks like she's almost boss of them. If there's 16 or 17 of them living in Glendale, she makes it a trip to go over and always has within 2 or 3 weeks that we have to go to their house where they put on what you'd call a boarding house dinner, or they'd have to come over to our home and we'd have the same thing. That's been done for years, and she is really serious about some of those kids that go to school. And That, I think, has taken up quite a bit of her time, and she does love, naturally, the house that we have and the home. But I personally now, I could be satisfied in 8 or 10 cities. I have numerous cities that I would say that I like better than other cities, and wouldn't make any difference to me now where I was, if I was around men or my friends. Now, I can be out of baseball. I've been out of baseball 1 year, and I withstood it, and I wasn't shocked too much. I was interested in baseball. I was interested in the players they had on the Yankee team. It wouldn't make any difference whether they all had a high opinion of myself, but I still was interested in those men because they'd accomplished so much, and they are a terrific machine at the present time. In other words, they're fortified with catchers. They're fortified at first base. They've blended it together, and at their highest pitch now that they have been in the last 10 years in which they are playing their own players. They are getting by with less trades, and they're strong with their farm system because the farm system finally has come through again for them where they have 4 or 5 men. Now that's what's got to be done over here. And it's got to be an idea that's sold that I would like to play with the New York Mets.
And your players.
They have to be given the idea that they are going to be financially reimbursed for playing with the New York Mets. Nowadays in baseball, the ball player too has to be seriously considered. Now, and he should consider, I've had a good year, I don't have to rest, because every day, you have to win every day is a serious thing for a ball player. Now, I've watched certain managers that are terrific on seeing a play quick, you know, amazing. They can spot a play quicker and see something that's coming up, or they prepare to keep out of a bad inning. They prepare to take that pitcher out. They can see that I'm going to have to go get that man where I'd love to let him stay in there. Other men say, well, I left the pitcher in too long. Once I take a pitcher out, I've always said, even I know how he feels, that I'm responsible the minute I go out and say, let me have that ball. And, of course, they don't want to give you that ball. They can't see, or they don't hit at the ball themselves. And maybe I am wrong when I take the pitcher out, because that's the great thing about relief pitching nowadays. It's an amazing thing. It sure takes a fire out of a hitter, a strange pitcher. It takes you over once to find out that he's a different man, and you have a ball that just jumps 3 inches, and the first thing you know, that man's paralyzed up the plate or don't have a even swing for just one time at bat, possibly 2 times at bat. Then that same ball, they get onto it and they offset it, because each man is fighting each other. And the managers generally put in a lineup, or if they have a lineup, or if they're very good in surviving and keeping the team. Now, I was very interested in Lopez because of the fact when he played for me, I switched and let Lopez call signs. I thought that I was calling for too many signs several years when I was a manager. Possibly I was. Now, I had Lopez do that, and he went a great deal of respect from the pitchers that they believed he was right, and they still had a mind. Now, some men that I've known that I would prefer not to say that I allowed them, maybe that was the bad part of their catching. I would preferred maybe to have called the signs on. But Lopez had a great asset there. It showed that he was going to become something and he was interested in baseball. He used to come to a ballpark and used to sit around. I thought he played too much. I was catching him every day. My heavens, that is a joke. He would come out and he'd wrestle with fellas in the clubhouse, and they'd come up and slap him around. And then I said, say, don't you know you're going to catch a doubleheader? And they used to split the catchers, you know, for the doubleheader. But Lopez would catch the doubleheaders. He was a good, strong kid, and he was very ambitious, and that's one of the reasons. McGraw was another leader. He was a great man. He was very quick on offense. You got to have some men are great on offense, some are great on defense. They can see every little angle that an infielder is doing or how he should play or where he should move over or are right 8 out of 10 times where a certain pitch is going to go and what direction. They're good at placing the men in the outfield or the infield. And there's so many things to manage in that you say, well, why is it that you play the same game? Now, you can't play the same way. You have to use the common sense, and you have to have the double play. And the greatest thing is that's ever lasted in baseball has been one thing. A good catcher, he stops the throwing if he can throw and if he can think. Now, go right on to the pitcher. If he can pitch, it's more than 50%. Now, if you go to shortstop and second, you get double plays. And center field, it's the same thing. So everything comes for the 27 putouts. Then you have to have confidence on of your own players, even if they don't of you. You possibly have to have the confidence because you yourself never give up because you don't know what's inside that player. You don't even know that some players you haven't handled properly yourself, but they are fighting for you out there. That's a terrific man for you that fights on the ball field because he doesn't hold the other 20 men back. He does not ruin an owner, and he does not affect the coaches. And it makes a great thing when a man can say, I don't like you well, but on that ball field, I'm going to do my best until the season's over. Then the manager is very fortunate. But if you've got a man that's going to pout, and he says, I don't want to play here, well, he's been a coward for you for 2 or 3 years because he didn't have nerve enough to tell it, but he went out and gave a big lecture about where you was weak instead of going and watch himself. And unless he's 1, 2, 3 in those batting average or as a pitcher grade, that man has got something weak that's inside of him, and I hope that the other boy or children that he brings up won't follow his method.
Casey, you described to us in passing the strength of a team, which is down the middle, when you pointed out how important it is to have strength in catching and pitching and the second base combination also in center field. Something that many people don't know also is that you got the nickname Casey because you're from Kansas City, the initials KC. I remember there was a luncheon, a very lovely birthday party for you in Kansas City about 3 years ago. George Goldman and a few other friends of yours arranged it. They've been friends of yours since they were children. And I recall one of them telling me that one of your hobbies is dancing. And I was wondering whether you ever have a do you ever have a chance to dance, Casey?
Well, yes, I tell you the truth. That's what I didn't say that when you're speaking about my wife, but to tell you the truth, I think that's why I was married. She was a very good dancer, and I went to several dances, and I was skipping the dew very lightly on the floor, and she commenced thinking I was one of the greatest dancers at the present time she'd met in her life. And it was rather easy when I said yes, and she talks about my dancing now, but there's a lot of other things that she doesn't think so highly of, like dancing about Mr. Stengel.
Casey, 1962, the new National League team in New York, the New York Mets. Can you look ahead and tell us how you think the team will do?
I don't know. It depends upon these men. If I had children, these young men do. And if I was abused on a club, and possibly was, by, you might say, salaries or other baseball officials, and I was put on a trading block, I would try and convince those people that I'm a big league ball player. I would convince them on and off the team, and I would see if I could now make the biggest plunge and be a big leaguer and demand that this club give me a large salary so that I can have my children comfortable and send them through for higher education, or I'd have to look for another profession.
Thank you very much, Casey Stengel, the Dean of Baseball Managers, the number one citizen in the whole world of baseball, the manager of the new National League team in New York City, the New York Mets. This is Cliff Evans reporting.